All right, welcome back everybody to Talk Openly. My name's Jack and Daniel, I am so happy to see you this week.
It
Able to
feels
be
like
here.
only yesterday that we were here, but it was a whole week.
It was a whole entire week with like all of our life stuff and other humans and other beings in the world. It's like been all, yeah, it's been an entire week. Amazing.
It's mind-numbing sometimes how fast it ends up feeling.
Yeah, December 5th. Yeah, it was actually my partner and my anniversary on Sunday. Yeah, Sunday.
Nice.
Yeah, 7 years, and that was kind of amazing to reflect on.
7 years.
I know. Yeah, that was like, oh my God. And I feel like
Good.
I'm just getting to know this
I was gonna
person,
say, it sounds like
you
you guys are getting serious.
know? Right. Yeah, we're pretty serious. I like him. He's good.
I like it. Nice. Well, I'm
Yeah.
very happy for your guys' anniversary.
Thank you.
Here's to another 7.
Yeah, cheers. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about the perfection of meditation. This is the fifth of the six paramita. And I know we're going to have plenty to talk about. Maybe not from like direct experience, but certainly from the masters that we're learning from. So I'm looking
Thank you
forward
for clarifying that, Jack. I was feeling woefully inadequate for discussing the subject matter tonight.
Totally. Yeah, I know. Same here. Like I'm just like barely scratching the surface of meditative concentration. So got a lot of work to do. But I'm
Cool.
excited to explore it with you. This is
Same.
the exact place to do it.
Yeah, it is. I'm happy
Yeah.
for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that you're saying it's felt like it was just yesterday that we met, but it's been a whole week. So what's happened? What's happened in your week?
So I've been distracted by many things, all kinds of stuff going on and like pulling me like in every little direction possible, right? Between friends and family and obligations and work and you name it, right? It just feels like I'm like one of those gummies or something being stretched in all these different directions. So yeah, it's kind of wild. I'm feeling a little bit on the tired, worn out side, but I'm super happy to be here. I had a lovely Sunday. Actually, I went for a long hike with my oldest daughter. She and I don't get to spend a lot of time together, just the two of us. Usually there's other people around. So we went for this long hike up in the Cape, not the Cape Valley, but anyway, out by Davis. And I'm still feeling, and my calves are, it was a steep hike. It was like a 3-hour hike, and like the first half is climbing uphill the whole time, right? And yeah, and it's like, oh, I feel like old, right? I had no idea that I was gonna feel this way for so long.
That's great that you got out there, though.
Oh, we had a
Had
lovely time. It
some
was
time.
beautiful. Oh, there's nothing like going out into nature. It's like going to church or something.
Oh my gosh, it really is. Yeah, it's so funny you say that because actually in one of the groups that I facilitated today, sometimes we do these kind of like go around questions where everyone kind of answers a question. And one of the questions was, what role, if any, does spirituality play in your life? And this woman who really hasn't participated much in the groups is very much like responding to internal stimuli, meaning like that she's hearing voices and responding to them and all these things. She took a pause, she sat with it, and then she very clearly stated how like she just started talking about the beach, and she being out on the water and walking along the water. And it was just so beautiful to see like this connection, right, between nature
Yeah.
and spirituality, and that, this person, in a lot of, for a lot of people, it seems like she's totally gone, right? And I felt that way too.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, there's these little things that can kind of bring us back. And so it was just really cool to see that connection with nature and spirituality. So
Absolutely beautiful. What a wonderful story. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely feel that way about getting out into nature, you know, even just even I mean even sort of just like outside, right? just wandering around, even in a city, makes me feel a lot more alive, so to speak, grounded, connected. Yeah. It's the best, good for curing depression and anxiety, that's for sure. I've always noticed, you know, like there's this funny thing when because I have a dog that, you know, I always have to take her out like first thing in the morning. And it's amazing to me. I'll wake up on the wrong side of the bed. I'll be all grumpy. Life sucks. It's terrible. No motivation, but I have to take this dog out. So I get outside, and as soon as like the door is open and I'm outside, I'm a different person. I'm a completely different being. I'm not the same person I was milliseconds before while I was inside. And then by the time the walk's done, I'm grounded, connected, feeling good, alive, generally happy, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. And how great that, you know, you have this this being who kind of, you know, is forcing you to remember those good things.
I'm super grateful to all of the beings, human and other that helped me along the way. Yeah. I don't always appreciate it in the moment, you know. I don't always remember to have gratitude, but upon reflection, it turns out everyone that I've been meeting along the way here in my life has been helping me out in some way.
Yeah. Sure thing.
Exactly. And my meditation practice is good. I did have, it was interesting though, this might be TMI, but I'm going to do it anyway. So I tend to get up pretty early for my meditations, and today was no different. I got all set up and was like doing some preliminary practices, and I was like, oh man, like something, I like my stomach, it doesn't feel so good, like, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like, I was like, well, whatever, like it'll calm down and meditate, you know? And so I was like moving along, and I kept sort of like ignoring it. And then finally I was just like, oh man, like something is not okay there, right? Like, ah, oh. And I literally was just like, oh, well, it doesn't matter that I woke up and I intended to sit in meditation right now. This is not conducive to meditation. It's clearly going to be distracting. So right. I just went and laid on the couch for a little while and pet the little my girlfriend's chihuahua.
Oh,
it was chihuahua meditation this morning.
Yeah, that is fair.
Yeah. No, sometimes you better, like, you know, it's important, right? Like we talk about not to push too hard if the situation calls for a little bit of softness and flexibility.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and what you're saying, I think, is right, that there's some conditions that are just not conducive to meditation. You know, and we are fortunate to have a home where we can have a little corner that is our peaceful, quiet place. And you know, we set up that place so that it is like the right conditions for practice. And so, you know, if there's something going on, if there's, you know, a fire in the kitchen or, you know, a very upset stomach, like we've got to take care of that first.
That's right. Exactly. But overall, things are moving right along. I think, Yeah, it's good. Good stuff. I think tonight's topic is could not be more appropriate for me. I've been meditating off and on for, I think, about 7 years now, something like that, and working hard to develop a daily practice and all of that. And I sort of like, I know this is wrong, but, you know, some part of my egoic identity is even wrapped up in meditation and meditating. Mm-hmm. And I oftentimes still sort of lose sight of what I'm doing. You know, like, wait, what's this about? And why is it beneficial? Like, I, you know, don't get me wrong, I get the basics, but, you know, like, I kind of just like, forget about it. You know, like what exactly I'm doing. And sometimes it feels a little bit even rote, you know? And so, it's good. I'm so happy that we're going to be talking about the perfection of meditation tonight.
No, that's a lot of what I'm kind of encountering as well in my training. And that kind of rote quality where I'm, you know, I'm getting up and I'm doing the thing. But there's a way that I'm not engaging with the sacredness. That, you know, really brought me to the temple. And has given my training a lot of life, right? That's kind of like the wind that, you know, we've talked about. And so, yeah, it kind of just, yeah, kind of trying to parse out like where do I connect with the sacredness, and how can I, you know, yeah, draw myself out so that I'm, you know, connecting with that. Because I think sometimes, you know, I get in this rut where, you know, I've my whole life and many lifetimes, I've been trained very well to expect things to just come to me and fix me. You know, I think my training in spirituality in this life started out very much with that, you know, there's this creator that's gonna, you know, be able to, you know, do miracles and do everything for me if I just, you know, kind of say my prayers and whatnot. And so I kind of see that that's a little bit that's happening where, you know, I'll do like tar practice or, you know, even just the preliminary prayers. Yeah. It's kind of like, okay, I'm just trying to get something out of this. And that's, yeah, that's not the engagement that I want. It's got to be a relationship rather than transactions. So, it's interesting though. So yes, I think the topic's going to be perfect. But yeah, otherwise I'm doing okay. I feel pretty exhausted. Similar to you, I'm being pulled in a lot of directions. But it's good. I love my job. I love what I do. Feel really engaged with it. I did want to mention, I started watching this show, which, you know, TV is problematic for me in various ways. I don't watch a lot of TV. I'm going to give myself some credit there. But anyways, I started watching this show called The Deep End, and it's about basically this cult that is started by this person, Teal Swan, and she's kind of like this wellness guru kind of like not trained in any professional way to do mental health stuff, but is very much like trying to heal people's trauma through things that are very scary, like and kind of problematic. And it's so interesting to kind of watch. Like I'm watching this show with the mindset of like, how did I get to the temple instead of like wrapped up in something like this? And so it's been really interesting, like to kind of dissect, like, you know, our lineage and our training is so, so very focused on ethical behavior, not doing harm, you know, really doing as much as possible to like prevent harm. And part of that is that our teachers are vetted by other teachers, you know, they have like the whole training is mentorship. And, you know, here comes these people like this person, Teal Swan, where they're just like, they're their own person, you know, they're coming up with this stuff and they're telling people that they're right, you know, that they're like the most advanced people in the world. Right. And it's terrifying. It's terrifying. Like this incredible narcissism that is on display in this show. And people really get wrapped up in it. And I can see how like when I was first working on my recovery, both like, you know, mental health and substance use and whatnot, I had almost this kind of like nihilistic like, oh, well, I got through it, so other people should be able to get through it. And like, you know, I'll like kind of beating, like both beating myself up and beating other people up. Like, oh, I just need to work harder and they need to work harder. Yeah. Like I've put in all this work and gone through scary shit and like worked on myself, you know, and I just need to keep doing that. And other people should too. And so I can see how like that kind of mindset could get wrapped up in this kind of cult vibe where it's like, these people who just believe that, you know, this person is going to be really hard on them, and that they're just not doing enough. Yeah, it's been really interesting to watch and to kind of compare, like, just like the glory of our teachers, you know, deep, like deep compassion, and that they will be hard on us, but out of just like complete, like knowing that, you know, like we can do it, and they're not going to push us beyond where we're capable and what we've learned so far. So anyways, it just like brought up a lot for me. I've been thinking so much about it and like so, so grateful that, yeah, I had at least some awareness to kind of follow a path that has been laid out rather than one that's just been created in a few years. So
yeah, no, for sure. I hear you on that. I think it's interesting. There was a little bit of a theme that I picked up on there. Between the show and this sort of wanting something, just to get something right out of whatever, a particular practice. I've been reflecting a lot lately on the nature of like exactly sort of what you talked about my like my upbringing and my expectations around spiritual practice. And I recognize actually this deep yearning that you and I, we've talked about it before, but it's really been sort of like lingering lately, that there's this deep desire for something outside of me or someone outside of me to cause the transformation, if you will. You know, I want somebody to just do whatever you need to do, just beat me into shape, right? Tell me I'm a bad boy, or give me some strong rules, or, you know, some type of external discipline or whatever, you know, like there's this recognition of wanting, for example, like authority, or like a mommy daddy sort of figure that knows everything, is omniscient, and can guide me along and tell me what to do and what not to do and cause me to behave certain ways and whatever, right? And that's just magical, wishful thinking. And I understand how I was conditioned to become, you know, to have those kinds of thoughts and feelings. But what really strikes me with at least my own personal experiences with our teacher is, like, he just absolutely refuses to do that for me. You know, one time I remember we were sitting in some kind of a meditation thing. It might have been a recovery meeting. And I remember just being like, I just want you to like just jump out, like while I'm asleep or whatever, and just knock some sense into me, right? Like, why with all the teaching stuff, right? Like, why do I? Because it, like you pointed out earlier, it's actually this relationship, right? Because it's tempting to say, oh, okay, so there's nobody out there. It's me then. I have to do this, right? And there's like, and that's another sort of weird sort of extreme that people fall into, this sort of like, there's nobody, there's nothing outside of me. I'm going to do it with through sheer, you know, willpower and force and all of that, right? And people hurt themselves that way. They hurt themselves on these, you know, both looking for something outside and thinking that it's entirely inside, when in fact, it's relational, right? Yeah. And we're very fortunate to have the teachings and the teacher that we do, and that we're able to relate to it. Because I know for, you know, many parts of my own life and many people, they are unable to relate to such teachings in a beneficial way, I think.
Yeah,
just because of where they are, right? They can't hear it, they can't see it, can't meditate on it,
right? Yeah. I've been thinking about that with I guess I'm noticing like how different people in my life are probably, well, you know, I don't want to say probably, but like, yeah, just likely not going to engage with Dharma, you know, in their life, right? Or at least like in a you know, kind of direct way. And I think the evangelical in me is like really upset about that, you know? But also at the same time, like I'm reflecting on, you know, well, okay, that's not the part of their like karmic journey right now. And also like, yeah, just be grateful that I have this opportunity, you know, like it's
right.
I don't need to try and like get everyone to be doing what I'm doing, you know, like we've talked about that before, where there's this kind of like, yeah, wanting to force like my spiritual practice on other people that like, oh, you should be doing this. It really works, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that never works to try and do that. But yeah, to instead, like, I've just been reflecting on like, wow, I'm really glad that I get to do this, you know? Yeah. And it's okay.
Like, totally okay. Totally. And the more that you work on it and work on, you know, yourself and walking this path on your own, you know, the more likely that you'll be able to guide or nudge people along the way. You know, I'm not saying from an evangelical point of view. I just mean,
right.
You know, just sort of through the power of your example.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's always been the most powerful thing for me. You know?
Think about how many lifetimes we spent not engaging with the Dharma.
Yeah.
We ourselves, yeah. Right? Like,
oh yeah. Yeah, I know. And even, you know, in this life, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, you know, with meditation, they're really like, oh my gosh, it just feels like there's this barrier in my mind. Like, and I'm pointing up here because, you know, it feels like there's a tension, you know, in my physical mind, brain or whatever. But yeah, just this like disconnect I feel in my everyday life, even having met the Dharma and like working on ethical behavior, which I know like ethical behavior really helps clear the mind, you know, even when really kind of like starting to get into this and on this path, like I still feel this just incredible disconnect from like the reality that I know is there, which is that I'm going to die. You know, I'm going to die. I really need to work on this like opportunity right now. And you know, of course every day it's like, it just goes back to I'm, you know, doing my life thing. It's just going to continue on into eternity. It's what it kind of feels like. But I know, like, I'm, it's sounding like I'm being hard on myself, but I'm actually feeling quite gentle, and loving, and knowing that, like, as long as I remain on this path and continue the effort, like, that barrier, whatever it feels like is there, I'm going to have a different perspective on it at some point. Not saying that it's going to completely go away anytime soon, but I do know that there's going to be a different perspective, a shift on it.
For sure. I think like, I like the analogy or the metaphor that Lama uses about, you know, there's basically, there's this big like paper, you know, barrier, if you will. And then you just pinprick it away, right? Yeah, a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit there. And then before you know it, there you go. No more barrier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where's like the fire, the torch thrower,
right?
Down the paper.
I like it. You know, I think the torch, just to borrow a metaphor from, a painting that's related to the stages of meditation, I think the flamethrower is known as effort.
Effort. Yeah, got to really put it in.
No, there's I might bring it up tonight, but you know the stages of the path, or, you know, it's like a drawing of a monk and an elephant and a monkey on the path, and this is stages of shamatha.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that there's like a fire, a flame that's really big in the beginning and gets smaller and smaller along the way. I'm pretty sure that that flame, that fire is effort. So when you said flamethrower, I was like, oh yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. I'd love to, I'm going to, yeah, remind myself of that image. Yeah. That'll help. Oh, great. Well, I think, you know, a great start to talking about meditation would be to check out some Lojong, which is another form of meditation in itself. It's kind of like a contemplative meditation. Mm-hmm, so Daniel has pulled up the random Lojong slogan generator, which you can find on lionsroardharmacenter.org. And we've decided last week, we think it might be the only random generator of Lojong, perhaps in the world, would you say?
It could be throughout all of time and space.
Oh.
And it could be the only random Lojong slogan generator to have ever existed.
That's pretty rad, gotta say. Good job, Dirk, again.
Yes, shout out to Dirk. Good job.
Well, all right, so
let's do it. There's a button. I'm going to push it. Let's see what we get.
All right. Ooh. Oh gosh.
Okay.
This one's hard for our show. So this is number 58. It says, don't be like an open book. I'm really curious about this one because I don't remember seeing this one. So the translation must be different from the Lojong that I have. But Tralag Kyabgyon says, we don't need to display every passing emotion as if some kind of drama were going on every minute of the day. That approach is often confusing for other people. This Tibetan phrase literally means letting everybody know whatever emotion we are feeling. Interesting.
Don't wear your heart on your sleeve.
Well, you know, I wonder if it's like, so I think at least from what Lama has, I feel like I'm learning from Lama is that we want to be transparent, right? And transparency also helps us connect with other people. Yet I think what this is saying is that maybe we don't want to do it for every kind of like passing moment, right? Because like during a day, how many like wild emotions just kind of fluctuate, and you know, that we can get pulled away by.
I was just talking about this very thing this morning. You know, it's interesting is that, you know, we all kind of know people who are in fact quite dramatic, right? Like where you see the acting out of whatever thoughts or whatever feelings they're having in the moment, whatever it is. And it does oftentimes seem sort of like dramatic, right? It seems like it's, and that actually there's something somewhat attractive about those kinds of people. Like we generally kind of like people that are like, you know, very lively and vibrant with their emotions, or angry, and then they're loving and happy and kind of over the top. And I think that to me, it seems, the suggestion seems to be a little bit along the lines of like, of course we want to be mindful of our emotional states. That's important. To be aware of what we're feeling, that's very important. But I think that if we have that sort of awareness, we don't necessarily need to be putting on a big show, right? We don't need to display it to everybody. If someone were to ask us, or if we felt like it was skillful to share how we were feeling in the moment, there's perhaps, you know, maybe using nonviolent communication or something like that to share how we were feeling. That could be skillful, but this sort of like constant neurotic, like having to be hot and cold all the time for the benefit of other people, I think that's the kind of crap that is saying not to do.
Yeah. And that's pointing out that, you know, oftentimes if we're, you know, really caught up in every, you know, passing emotion, it's probably because we're, you know, coming from a self-centered place rather than thinking of others, you know. So if we're just kind of constantly caught up in our emotions, then we're not thinking about other people, which can be confusing.
Well, also, it's not just that, it's also, I think, this being carried along, right? Yeah. Talk about being distracted.
Right.
It's the opposite of concentrated meditation, right? It's the opposite of being present and aware. When you just, you know, some ragey moment, some reactive something takes you and you want the whole world to know, right?
Right.
I think a good example of, well, never mind. I know people like this.
Don't be like an open book. Well, and you know, I think what's really helpful to remember too is like, sometimes if we're able to just kind of shut up a little bit,
right,
with someone, like that person's gonna feel like a lot safer in that dynamic. Like if I'm just kind of like spewing every kind of given thing that comes to my mind, like That's kind of a scary interaction.
That's right.
We can just say, like, actually, it's not that important. So I'm just going to, like, shut up and listen.
I think it's like that, you know, the British subway thing saying, mind the gap. Right. I think it's like that. It's like, yeah, okay, so you become aware of a particular fleeting emotional state, and you mind the gap between that and the reaction. And then you can sort of selectively choose whether or not you act on that emotion or display it or whatever the heck it is you're going to do. But this sort of reactive, compulsive dramatization, acting out of whatever we're feeling, that's getting like caught up, right? Talk about being distracted. Like, that's the ultimate form of distraction.
Yeah, this seems to definitely be kind of in the vein of right speech.
Yeah,
and right and mindful speech, you know, knowing when and what is helpful to say. Yeah. Ooh, I love the colors of this tanka here. And can we read the little caption below? So, preaching Shakyamuni. And yeah, it's just this really beautiful painting of Shakyamuni Buddha teaching the Dharma. There, and if you come onto the Lojong slogan generator, each time you'll get a slogan with a beautiful painting or artwork. So check it out. Great. Well, I'm really glad we got that slogan, because I don't think we've seen that one yet. And that was kind of fun.
I like it. Practical.
Yeah, super practical. Well, let's get into it, Daniel. So the perfection of meditation. This is our fifth out of six paramitas. And this is one where I definitely... I feel like I have a little bit less of an understanding, but I know we're going to explore together and learn a little bit more.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I feel sort of woefully inadequate, but like you said, we have some excellent masters that, you know, pointed the way for us.
For sure. And you know, what's interesting is that just like the last, you know, four paramitas that we've talked about, when I actually approach like the texts about each paramita, it ends up being somewhat different from what I expected it to be.
Oh. So
Shantideva in chapter 8 of Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, he talks about the whole chapter is dedicated to the perfection of meditation. And so I thought there was going to be a lot of discussion around what meditation actually is, like what sitting meditation is, you know, all of that. But turns out basically the entire chapter until like maybe the very last two stanzas is about what can get in the way of a meditation practice and of developing stability.
Yeah.
And so I found that really interesting, that like so much of the perfection of meditation is actually about being mindful of distractions in our direct environment and what we're doing, instead of like the actual training itself. So yeah. I thought that was like fascinating and challenging.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think that to a large extent, my meditation experience so far has been the very, very early sort of work to deal with these distractions, right? Like that's still what I'm up to, right? Yeah. Years later, even though there are sometimes, you know, what's interesting about the sort of like the different levels of meditative states is that, you know, it's not totally linear, right? Like there's times where I sort of have a particular meditative state and then I'm like, oh, like, wow, whoa, that's amazing. There's a hole poked in that little, you know, in that paper or whatever, right? The boundary. But then I sort of like digress a bit, or I fall back a little bit and back into this sort of meditative state that's characterized by a lot of distraction, right?
Well, and I feel like Shantideva is not even necessarily talking about distraction within a meditation, like formal meditation,
no,
but
I don't
like
think so either.
distraction in life itself.
Yeah.
And how that's going to impact our willingness to engage in meditation at all.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. So that was like, that was surprising to me. I mean, you know, and of course, once I got into it, I was like, well, of course, that makes so much sense. Like what we are doing in our, you know, everyday life post-meditation is going to be our meditation.
Right.
You know, like that's, it's going to show up. So yeah, of course it makes sense. And you know, I feel like Shantideva in his so like direct and somewhat bombastic at times style, like he's always just saying, you know, I want you to be liberated, you know, like I want you to get
Yeah.
this, like I'm gonna drill it in because I want you to be liberated. But sometimes it's hard to read, to be honest, you know, where I really feel that kind of like twinge of like, oh shit, I'm totally like still obsessed with like the eight worldly concerns, right? Like I'm always like, even like sitting in my meditation, I've noticed oftentimes I'm thinking about like what dessert or like bubbly water I might have like after my sit.
Oh yeah.
And when I really think about that, I'm like, oh my God, what kind of like bullshit are you doing? This bullshit. It sucks. It sucks. Like what you're doing sucks right now. You know, like it almost hurts, right? To be like, I'm spending like this sacred time thinking about bubbly water. Oh my God.
That's exactly it, right? Is that we are, like, that's the situation that we find ourselves in, is that there's all these like silly, I mean, when we really like just stop to look at the chatter of the mind, like what's going on in there, it's not just like mundane, it's ludicrous, right? A lot of it is silly and nonsensical and meaningless, pointless, right? Like I was laughing when you were talking about this, because a couple of mornings ago, I woke up, you know, I'm sitting there, it's freaking early in the morning and I'm meditating and everything is peaceful and calm. It was great, it was beautiful. And then, you know, a little ways into my meditation, I remember that there were some cookies on the kitchen counter, right? Like somebody had baked cookies or something, and they were. I knew that they were there, and all of a sudden, I was like hooked and gone. I was thinking about the cookies, and I was, you know, and then and the same thing as you, I'm like, oh my God, I came back. I'm like, what am I doing here, right? Like, it's crazy. Like, that's just like, that's my monkey mind doing its thing, running away, right? Yeah. And so, it is sacred to calm that mind, to tame that mind,
yeah,
right? Because this path of liberation that we're on, it's one of taming the mind. The mind is wild and crazy, and sometimes a little bit silly, right? And oftentimes hungry for cookies, or you know, at least mine is. And so, you know, like that's where we, as Shantideva says, in very, very, very first, can I read the very first verse of
Please
chapter 8?
Mm-hmm.
He says, after cultivating diligence, set your mind to concentrate. For those whose minds are slack and wandering are caught between the fangs of afflictions, right? Yeah. And so, I mean, the afflictions are many, right? Everybody has their own kleshas. Everybody's dealing with their own thing, right? So in my case, a sweet tooth, right? I reckon whatever, right? Like we all have it. And so, and that it's a root cause. We think so the problem is not that cookies exist or that bubbly water exists. That's fine. The problem isn't even that I'd like one. But that's not a problem either, right? It's what it's my relationship there, and like what I hope to get out of that whole thing, right? And this desire to reduce my stress and to get some happiness, you know, get a little fix, you know, and then just to witness how that it's impermanent and it just doesn't do what I want it to do,
yeah,
right? And we just
so disappointing.
It's so disappointing. And you know what's really disappointing, Jack? Here's the disappointing thing. Is not just that it happened one time I was sitting and meditating and I caught myself wandering off about cookies, but that's going on constantly, day in and day out, yeah. Right? And yeah. No matter how much training I have, no matter what I'm doing, it's still like heavy. There's still a lot of mud. There's still a lot of dust covering.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh yeah. I think that's what I mean by the barrier in my mind in some ways, where I think I'm through, like, you know, developing this paramita of meditation where I'm at. I'm just starting to see how much sludge is in there and like feeling pretty disturbed by that. It's like, you know, when I first came to the temple and started meditating, it was like there was all this lightness. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I feel calm, you know? And I think as we deepen our meditation practice, it's like, you know, Lama has this metaphor of we have this dimmer switch that's just slowly going up, and we can start to see all the shit that we have in our hoarder mind, you know, like, so I don't think like it was ever that when I first started meditating that I was like, you know, farther along in the training, right, than I am now. Like, that doesn't make any sense, right?
Yeah.
It's just that now I'm starting to see how much is there. And I really hope that doesn't prevent people from trying to, you know, develop a meditation practice. It's actually fascinating to start to see some of this stuff. And I think like when those kind of moments happen where it's like, oh my God, there's the cookies again. It can be fun. Like, it's funny, right? It's kind of like, oh my God, this is wild. But my brain just like automatically. And even when I try and like come back, there it is again. Or it's like, it comes in a different way where it's like, oh, but what if someone else in the house gets the rest of the cookies? And then there's like this whole other, there's, it's so sneaky. The mind is
so sneaky. It really is. I can't help it. The discursive mind, I think whoever drew the image of the path that we were talking about there by saying that it's a monkey, I think they got it just right. You know, I can't help it. So in the drawing, can I just show it? Can I put it up?
Sure. Yeah. I think that's great.
I hope it's not too distracting, but I love this drawing. I remember, or this painting rather, is Tanka. I remember, somebody teaching it in a meditation class. I think you might have been there for that.
I think I remember that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And it really stuck with me. I had this as a postcard on my wall for a long time. So let me share my screen.
Well, and the monkey is so like kind of mischievous, right?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Okay. So can you see my screen well?
Yes.
Okay. So here in the beginning, the monk is us, right? That's us, the meditator. I won't get into all the symbolism. But look, here's the monkey. That's the discursive mind, it's a discursive aspect of mind. And the elephant is the representative of mind itself. And the monk is chasing after a monkey that is leading the elephant around.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that's yeah, that's and, def- definitely.
And see how the mind, the elephant there almost has this kind of like nervous look.
Yes.
Where it's like, what's happening? Oh my gosh, I'm just like being carried away everywhere. That's... Oh my God.
right, exactly. And what I think is so hopeful about this is that in fact, like what we see in our own experiences along the way, I'll zoom out a bit, but along the way, we notice like actually that this is that what the teachers have taught a lot about what the path looks like and what these stages look like, that it begins to resonate, because in the beginning we did come, and then in fact our monkeys were in fact pulling the elephant around, and it was crazy. It was a circus, like a literal circus, right? But one that was run by the animals themselves. And then just slightly, we make it up the path just to the first bend, right? Or right around the first bend. And all of a sudden things start to slow down and transform just a little bit, right? Yeah, we're still chasing them. But then a little bit later, the mind turns towards us. And then at the very end, you're riding the elephant and the monkey is hanging out in a tree eating fruit, right? So
and look at how beautiful all the symbolism in this is, so I like that you use the word hopeful, right? Because you can see the transformation happening, and not just like in the mind, right? The elephant, where that's kind of things are clearing up, right?
Yeah.
There's also a transformation in the meditator, the monk, where he starts to have more control, I think more confidence.
That's right.
And also in the monkey too, the monkey is starting to come back to his own, like, kind of, you know, natural colors, and he's willing to come along, right, and be there. And so part of the hopefulness there too is that I think what it's saying is that the monkey quality of the mind is not inherently bad, right? It just needs to be tamed, like you were saying. We need to find the right way to use the monkey. And to, I love that it's got a little, it's doing a little bow there. Thank you for showing. This is
yeah,
awesome.
I love this image. I find it so, so helpful, because it's described as like the 9 stages or levels of shamatha practice.
Yeah.
And what I, you know, the reason I said it's hopeful is because even if we are just down the path a little ways, you know, which certainly is the case for me, I can see a little bit of what it's suggesting. I'm like, oh, right. It's not like it was in the beginning. It's a little bit, the elephant has maybe turned a little bit and looked at me, and maybe the monkey isn't, you know, throwing its poop around anymore or something like that, you know? And so I see that. And then I know, because there are other people ahead of me on the path and who have done the entire thing, I know that it's like, this is possible and I can stick to it. I can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, when talking about Shantideva too, so he, as we're talking about this path of, you know, the different kind of stages of meditation, he's really encouraging us to take a look at what kind of prevents us from moving along that path, and taking that seriously, you know, taking that as like our job in this life is to kind of determine, okay, what distractions are keeping me from moving forward on this path, and really, really remembering the dissatisfaction of samsaric pleasures, like you were saying, you know, that as many cookies as we get, we're not going to be satisfied.
That's right.
You know, we're just not going to be satisfied by samsara. So, you know, he talks about all different things, whether it be, you know, like sex, you know, even, you know, close relationships, that when we invest all of our happiness, into those things, you know, we're going to be incredibly disappointed. And like you were saying, you know, it's those things aren't the problem. No. It's our fixation on them. It's our investment in them as our sole source of our happiness versus developing the mind, moving along that path of taming the mind, which,
yeah,
man, if there's anything that I've learned in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years of doing this thing that we're doing with Dharma and training and each other, right? is that I am so grateful that I have this opportunity to work on taming my mind.
Yeah.
Like, just, I can't even put words to it. Right?
Yeah. Well, isn't it weird when if we stop just for a moment and reflect on our own training, and we see that we have in fact successfully trained our minds a little bit, there has been some effect. There's, you know, deep appreciation and gratitude. Like it's almost like it's like it can kind of get you choked up almost, like, yeah, where you're like, I can't believe I'm so fortunate, because I was so lost, right? I was so drowning in all of this delusion and suffering all of this pain from getting wrapped up in all of these material things, right? And not seeing the way things really are, right? Instead, I was operating from this delusional state, and that was hurting me and it was hurting other people. And to see, like, to recognize, like, upon reflection, how true that is. And yet, like you were saying at the outset of the show, we still can get into somewhat like maybe apathetic states where we're sort of like, yeah, but I've, whatever, you know, like, I don't know. Work. What am I really? Yeah, what am I doing? Oh, it's just another thing on the to-do list. Yeah. Or in my case, sometimes my mind says, well, you know, you have a long time, right? Aren't there many, many lifetimes? Come on, you're a good guy. You're going to... No, no, and this is no joke. This is literally.
I know. Like, I'm laughing because I know it.
But yeah, my mind's just like, right? Like, let's just roll with the idea. Like, yeah. So you're, as long as you do it, you're a good boy, then you'll get another chance. And so just don't be, you know, real bad, and then you'll get reincarnated. You can try another. You can try it again in a better life. But no, it's here now, right? In fact, that's the Lojong slogan that we got last week, I believe, or that we've had before, right? Is to reflect upon our special, unique circumstances in having acquired the teacher, the teachings, the community, and the life that supports our training. This is precious, right?
I just got chills, you know, because it's like, oh my God, wake up. Like,
Wake up, right?
I had a moment of that this morning where I was doing, you know, just kind of like the prayers, you know, that I do every morning. And I had this moment where I was like, no, really think about what that means. And it just kind of like broke in me, like physically, even I could feel it, where it was like, oh, I'm trying to become a Buddha. Like that's a really big deal. Like, I'm not just saying like, oh, may I become a Buddha, you know, benefit being, every being, you know, it's like, no, that's everything. That's
right.
Yeah. What am I doing? I was wondering, you know, like, I think with this one, for me as like a lay person, part of my, where I get a little bit complacent is that I kind of think like, well, if I really was going to be a good meditator, if I was going to perfect meditation, then I would probably have to be like living in a cave and, you know, like just kind of in solitude for the rest of my life, or, you know, whatever. These are kind of like the delusions that I come up with to distract myself. But like, so how, as lay people, because I imagine most of the people listening are lay people, like how can we, you know, work on this paramita within the context of living our lives, having to work, having relationships, all the things?
Well, my sort of reactive answer to that is, on the one hand, anybody can meditate. You don't have to be Buddhist to meditate. And these stages of meditation, oftentimes referred to as jhanas, anybody can actually go through them, right? Like, you don't have to be Buddhist to benefit from meditation. What we're talking about is the perfection of meditation. And so I think that what we mean by that is doing it with a Bodhi mind, right? With the bodhicitta intention, that we really want to wake up. We want to become enlightened now. We want to be a Buddha now to be of maximum benefit to all beings, right? That's what we're really on about. And I think that's what makes it a paramita, right? Is that sort of intense intention behind it. The other thing I was going to say in response to that about being a lay person, you know, I actually heard that somebody referred to it as somewhat, this is just something that I heard, a childish meditative concentration that has to be separated from everybody, right? Has to be physically removed, has to actually, like, there's nothing wrong, that's good. Retreats are important and all of that, right? Like, I'm not putting that down. But we can actually, as lay people with busy lives, we can set boundaries. And I think that that's really, really important. You mentioned it at the outset as far as space goes, creating a little bit of space for yourself, creating that kind of a boundary. But we also owe it to ourselves to set time boundaries with other beings in our lives, right? So there's, if we say we're, I mean, we, there's no way that we're going to get enlightenment, right? There's no, like, we can't kid ourselves. If we can't on a regular basis meditate, if we can't practice on a regular basis, it's not going to happen. That's not how it works, right? Yeah. And so if we're going to do this, let's be serious about it. And what does that mean? Well, establishing some boundaries, it's okay. Even if you just say, kids, for 6 minutes, you're not going to interrupt me, right? Whatever that means. And I'm going to be in that space. I'm going to be sitting in the closet for 6 minutes, right? That's okay. That's that's appropriate, right? That then minimizes our worldly concerns.
Yeah, no, that's great. I along with boundaries, you know, good boundaries, I found that you know, Shanti Davis said the joy of contentment was something that's really important. And he was saying it in the context of living in solitude. Yet I think this absolutely can be applied to our lives as well. So like finding contentment in what we have, you know, not constantly seeking more of the eight worldly concerns.
That's right.
Which he really lays out in this chapter. And just living our lives with commitment to our training, rather than kind of constant commitment to things that are really unsatisfying. So I liked that. I liked thinking about that in terms of how we can approach our lives to be more workable towards meditation. Where it's like, okay, part of what I need to do is really subdue that mind that is constantly seeking. And so just being at peace with what I already have, I felt was really, really useful.
It's like what Tenzin Choki says, you need to learn to savor the okay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know, though, one thing that I'm reading this book by Pema Chodron. It's called No Time to Lose, A Timely Guide to the Way of the Bodhisattva, which is exactly what we're talking about. And one of the points that she made around this, she said, you know, outer solitude is a support for inner solitude. Mm-hmm. And that the point is not so much that we need to, despite the way that the language appears to us, the Shantideva language appears, the point isn't some type of a complete escape from the worldly life, right? Yeah. It's just that we tend to get hooked by this stuff, right? By cookies, things like that, right? By sparkly waters and whatnot. And that, like, we just need to be able to free ourselves, even just temporarily, from these distractions, right? Just that's where the boundaries and stuff come in. We just need to free ourselves from the distractions a little bit, take a little bit of a break, right? Because if we don't do that, it's going to be really hard to tame our minds. It's just practical.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think a show that we might want to do coming up soon is like maybe a little bit of like Dharma depression that I'm getting.
Oh, yeah.
Where I think when we do start to look at like all these distractions and really take into account like how unsatisfying they are, at least I've noticed for myself, I don't know anyone else, I'm feeling a little bit depressed.
Yeah.
And so I'd love to talk about that sometime, where it's like, okay, as we, you know, continue on this path and things that we used to do to like try and help our, you know, our suffering in the moment are not really working the way they used to. And that,
I want to give you some,
it burns a little.
It does. Would you say that you're nauseous with this? Because I want to read a little line. I think this is hopeful. Let's see here. Nausea with doing the same thing over and over is called wholesome disillusion. Maybe it's not Dharma depression, but perhaps it's wholesome disillusion, because it motivates us to break our habits, right?
Great reframe.
Right. And so, you know, I think that like it really is just that. I mean, that our obsession, our getting hooked, is what creates the veil in the first place that you were referring to. Yeah. And so when that veil is firmly in place, that wholesome disillusion goes away.
Yeah.
Right. And we are just, oh, life is good. Oh, it's so nice, right? I got cookies and candy and people who love me and sex on a regular basis and money and fame and oh, it's all good, right?
Yeah.
That's where our wholesome disillusion disappears. So I think maybe, you know, a little Dharma depression is not such a bad thing.
Nice. Okay, great. Well, that's really helpful. And I think a wonderful ending to this discussion on the perfection of meditation, that Okay, a little bit of wholesome disillusion is going to start emerging as we perfect Paramita.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And to invite
let's roll with it.
Let's invite it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring on that disillusionment. Hell yeah.
That's right. I totally want to be just, I want nausea, right?
Yes.
That, right? Like, that'll motivate me. Like, I want to have it perfected by next week.
Yeah. Okay, great. Let's check in next week about
that
it.
Way we can talk about the Paramita of wisdom from a point of view of experience.
Hell yeah. All right. Well,
got a week to do this, Jack.
Got a week to perfect meditation. Okay. I think it's not going to happen for me, but I'm going to work on it. I'm going to work on it as hard as I can.
All right. I'll let you know what it looks like when we get here.
Okay. Thanks, Daniel. This was lovely. I really appreciate you. And thank you to everyone who is listening. We love you. Please donate if you feel called to do so on the Lion's Roar dharmacenter.org website. We'd really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jack. Thank you, everybody who's listening. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.